Good evening. I am one half of the crew, Mr. Ordy Packer. The other half of the crew, Rick Robinson, is having internet shit problems. So, we just kind of said throw it together. And hey, Mickey, can you produce? And look who I got. I got Mickey Blowtorch producing me tonight. Mickey, how you doing, man?
I am doing good. Happy to be here and producing.
Yeah, it's just, we've never gotten to do a show, just you and I.
No, we haven't,
You
dude.
know, it's. Yeah, usually it's, like toxic masculinity or something like that. So this is going to be awesome. And so one of the things you and I are always talking about behind, okay, before we get into any of that, you put together that fantastic War of the Worlds. And I know everybody's probably sick of listening to us talk to it, but you and I haven't had a chance to talk about it
We
yet.
haven't.
That was fucking awesome.
Dude, wasn't that one of the coolest things you've been a part of?
That was just, I started reading my role earlier in the day and I figured, all right, how can I ordy this up a bit? And I had so much fun with that.
I think I
And
nailed it by casting you
props
as the
to Aggie.
farmer.
She is just a pro. I mean, she did not miss a beat with everything I dropped on her.
You know what I loved about it the most was this asshole said that it sounded like a 10th grade English class going through a read of a play. And it did. It was perfect. It's exactly how I envisioned it and wanted it to come out. I didn't want it. We're not professionals at
No.
acting or anything like that. So I just had like this
Well, Vincent
raw, oh,
Charles.
Vincent Charles, classically trained Vincent Charles.
Yes.
I had this notion in my head of it just being kind of like I pictured the Rat Pack, Sammy, fucking Frank, all those dudes, Dino, just drinking and reading through this and laughing and yucking it up. And that's what I was expecting for our production. And it ended up being a whole lot cooler than we intended it to be.
Well, yeah, and that's how you pitched it to me. You're like, let's just do kind of like the Rat Pack, just, having cocktails and, getting through a live reading. And that's when, one of the things that when I was look reading my role and looking at it, I was like, I remember, watching old videos of like Sammy Davis Jr. always trying to trip up Frank and Dean.
Yeah.
And so that's when I hit you up earlier in the day. I said, I'm just going full Sammy on this one. And you knew what I was talking about. And yeah, no, that was awesome.
Dude, it was so cool. Thank you for so much for being a part of it and the entire KLRN family too. I mean, it became something that we didn't expect it to be. And
Yeah.
as far as like life accomplishments go, yeah, it was on an internet radio station and we did get some great ratings, by the way. We
Sure.
did. But, there's something on a greater scale or a larger picture to what we did that night and what we actually accomplished than I think we can really convey to everybody out there. I mean, look how difficult it is to do something like that. I mean, look at all of the trials and tribulations they had, the actual Mercury Theater on the air. Going through that.
Right.
There's several movies about producing radio shows, and it's crazy. It's a circus. We actually did that shit, and we were not in a studio. We were at our individual homes on Skype.
And with like total of 3 days prep.
3 days prep. We
Yeah.
met once before. We set up a little DM room on Twitter so that we could all talk, but we really only had like one in-person meeting that lasted about 45 minutes to an hour, and then we
Yeah.
went live.
No, and testimony to you two getting it all put together is I remember what you were talking about it on He Said, She Said, and you're like, yeah, we're supposed to be doing this thing. I'm like, it's your show, dude. Get the ball.
Yeah.
I was typing in chat. Well, it's your thing, guy. Get it going. And then yeah, like in next to no time, we had it put together. That was just it was just so much fun. And props to you because, like I said, you got the people together. You really pulled all that together. And that just thank you. That was so awesome.
Well, you guys answered the call, and without each and every one of us, it wouldn't have been what it was. But thank
And
you.
I'm so looking forward to the Christmas one.
We are doing a Christmas production. We haven't announced, but we're definitely
We've
gonna
teased it.
we're teasing it. We've got a production selected. We're getting the casting done, and I think we're gonna have a big announcement Thanksgiving weekend. That's the rumor.
Yeah, I heard tell in those
Ooh.
parts that, yeah, I mean, Jeff put together a playbill and it's just the whole thing I'm really excited for.
What I think is pretty cool and correct me if I'm wrong, but every single person that participated in that production got bit by the bug.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, no, definitely. It's, I mean, everybody was ready to jump on it again because it was so fun and so fluid. It wasn't, you know, like, and the thing is, I mean, War of the Worlds, you think it's this huge production with all the ways that they've put it, you know, portrayed it, you know, between Orson Welles and the movies and everything else, and, you know, the behind the scenes movies and documentaries. But you get down to it, everybody only had, like, I mean, a couple people had some pretty lengthy role. Lou at the end and Brad.
I felt so bad for Lou. That was such a long monologue.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was like my role was 3 minutes. You know, granted, I spent half the day prepping on it, figuring getting the voice right and doing my ad libs and, you know, getting an idea of how I wanted to ad lib it. But, you know, it was just, it was easy. It was small, manageable bites.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it really was intimidating because the first half of that play is crazy. And on a production standpoint, was even more stressful. I spent the entire, I spent about 4.5 hours the day of the play going through all of the audio cues and just producing all of our sound effects, which we ended up not being able to hear because I've got some fucked up audio problems on my end. The audio all went out perfectly on the receiving end of it, but you guys didn't hear any of the sound effects that I was playing, and every single person still hit all their cues.
And because we couldn't hear it too, we kind of like ad-libbed some of the sound effects that worked really well.
It did.
When you listen to the broadcast,
especially the commotion on the Wilmoth farm, dude.
Yeah. And that, you know, aside from my whole stand-up role, that's the part that I actually, when I think about, I just laugh harder when, you know, Aggie's describing the creature coming out of the pit and torching the cars, and I'm across the room going, "My turnips!
My turnips!" And I love when you're like, "I got some of that that erotica, the hairy fella, Sasquatch cobra." When that ad-lib, dude, I was laughing my ass off. Of course, I had done some major bong rips before we hit the fucking go button, so I was just flying through this, dude. Of course, I'm the kind of guy that's got to make life infinitely difficult than what it has to be. So, you know, I could do this with my eyes closed, but I'm like, no, let's fucking rip that bong. Yeah, that's a great idea, Mickey. And so all of a sudden, I just give myself a handicap right up front.
How do I go into hard mode on this level?
Exactly.
Okay, bong rip.
I need that extra challenge, apparently.
But still, it worked out so great. It was just so much fun.
So what I loved the most is when I re-listened to it, the final product with all of the sound effects in place.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out perfectly, a perfect symphony.
Yeah, it really did. And like I said, I listened to it right after we finished, right after we did the rap party and everything. And just like, I want to hear how this came out on the other end. And I was just like, dude, you got to listen to it, because you were kind of down that the sound effects didn't work. And I'm all, no, go listen to it, because that you can hear it on, you know, what they heard. So.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Right after, you were kind of like, oh man, the sound effects didn't work. I feel so bad. I don't know. Go listen. It worked.
It really did. The levels were perfect too. I mean, how does something like that happen by itself?
It's meant to be, man.
It was meant to be. That was some total universal kismet there, the cosmos. But we really rocked it out, and I had so much fun, dude.
Yeah, just like I said, I'm looking forward to the next one too.
I am super excited.
One thing, you know, and the reason why it worked out is because we are in the second dumbest of all timelines, and so sound effects work, and we have Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Everything else is shit.
Speaking of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, apparently I drunkenly demanded Cinnamon Toast Crunch churros a couple weeks ago, and now I've got some in my pantry.
They're not bad.
I'm gonna try them. I haven't tried them yet.
They also have French Toast Crunch. I'm not a huge fan of, but the Cinnamon Toast Crunch churros, yeah, you get good value on that. It's extra.
It's extra. You don't like the OG Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
No, I love the OG Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I like to broaden my horizons, and the French Toast Crunch wasn't a fan.
Oh, I love the Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Well, I love cinnamon toast. I said the French toast one.
Oh, they had. I didn't know they had a French toast one.
Yeah, they have a French toast one.
Man, you really have your finger on the pulse of the English out there, Ordy.
I really do.
You're eternal rumspringing.
When it comes to breakfast cereal. You know, the one thing I haven't been able to find, though, and I'm wondering if it doesn't exist in this timeline because I see ads for it everywhere and I see it all over the internet. They have Oreo churros.
Hmm?
Yeah, right?
Never heard of them.
You warm them up, and they're like churros, but it's got the Oreo filling in it, too, and it's made out of the Oreo cookie on the outside. I've heard tell such things exist, but I can't find them anywhere.
I like that you keep saying this word timeline, and I'm sure we're going to circle back to that. For sure.
Oh yeah,
that's gonna be that's kind of like the pinnacle of our offline conversations. In fact, everything we do talk about revolves around this particular subject. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that don't seem to be existing in your quote unquote timeline that we used to know. And I've got like an entire list. Unfortunately, nothing's coming to mind right now since we had zero prep for the show, which is fine.
Sure.
But yeah, definitely like things that I used to think was like, you know, even from like movies and TV shows, movies that you thought were badass 20 years ago and you don't hear a single peep about them today.
You know, and that's, I mean, no, and it's the kind of thing that like pop culture was really running with, you know, keeping this thing alive. And then all of a sudden it just stopped. Like Avatar. Avatar was like the thing. I remember like people killing themselves because they couldn't live on the planet and then everybody universally agrees, wow, that movie kind of sucks.
It was horrible. I hated it.
Yeah.
It was like the Trail of Tears on an alien planet.
and 3 hours long.
You know, they're going to have casinos on that planet in the next fucking sequels. It was like that kind of shit. It was like total social commentary that was just boring. I mean, like the aesthetics were pretty nice, but they weren't that fucking phenomenal. The story wasn't that phenomenal, but yet people were so depressed going back to their dreary lives after seeing that movie, which was, it was entertaining. It was a fucking popcorn movie, but it wasn't by any means something so revelationist to kill yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get the first, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, it's a good movie. And I watched it a couple times once it, you know, hit on demand or whatever, and then never had the interest in watching it again. It's like the entire universe soured on that movie simultaneously.
It just had such a, I get sick of the same old story over and over and over. And it's always like the rich, crusty white man moving in. It was like Fern Gully, dude.
No, it was. It was Ferngully in space.
Yeah.
Like GR said in chat, blue alien Pocahontas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't that great of a story. It was kind of boorish when it came to social commentary. Nothing about it was really uplifting, you know, other than just the magnificent colors. That's what it did have that I did enjoy, was the fantastic color palette that it displayed.
Yeah, and I mean, the special effects, the VFX at the time were really good. Even that they do hold up. But it's like, okay, even for James Cameron can fart out a pretty good story from time to time. I don't know why that one we're just going to throw everything. It's like the prequel Star Wars. You know, we're just going to throw so much shit on the screen, people won't notice that it's really bad movie.
You're so right. And that even cuts into kind of like a movie that I incidentally watched last week called Midway, which was about a pretty significant battle in naval history. And they had just this absolutely star-studded cast. And obviously a huge budget, but the CGI was so saturated. It was fucking ridiculous.
See, you know what kills me is that, cause I remember you were talking about that on He Said, She Said, and I thinking about Midway, Memphis Belle had better VFX.
They did.
If you remember that one. Yeah.
I love Memphis Belle. And I was thinking about that. I was thinking about while I was watching Midway, how just shitty everything looked. And then I started to kind of think about, I'm like, well, how do they make it look so cool in like Memphis Belle? or before that, and they still had aerial battles and shit like that. And
I mean, I'm trying to think, they may have done practical effects with RC, but still.
Still, they it looked more realistic than what we saw on the screen with Midway.
Right, and 20 years later.
Yeah, well, you know, they went overboard with the computer saturation.
Just and like that's Disney the same, and when Pixar they redid does. The thing, same thing.
The dude, I watched the fucking thing yesterday, man.
The new one or the original one?
Both. The night before I watched the new one, which was apparently a prequel, I had no idea. And so watched the prequel, and then the girlfriend was like, I really like that movie. And I'm like, cool. I'm like, do you want to watch the original? And so we put the original on last night and watched that. And that was fucking amazing, of course. But how long? That was what, 82? And yeah. their special effects look way more realistic than what we saw that was shit out by a fucking computer and probably little to no production value of one of the most historical battles in the entire history of the American ethos, Midway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah. Shit, that was like a turning point right there. The only thing that they did right was they gave a lot of major props to the intelligence community, who is predominantly responsible for letting everybody know that Midway was the target. You know, that was a huge crypto win. And mm-hmm. Anybody that knows me, I'm former military intelligence, and I specialize in crypto, so the Battle of Midway was something that they always drilled into us in training and shit like that. So that was kind of cool that they paid that respect, but other than that, it was absolute shit.
Yeah, it's funny. I've heard you mention that before. I forgot about that. I actually, when I tried to get into the Army under Army Intelligence, and it was when Clinton was president and they were downsizing, and I had a hip injury from skiing, and they just said, nah, we're not going to take you.
Yeah, that was a rough era. Like, oh, yeah, you're a skier, huh? And,
yeah. Well, at Amish time, Olympian. I mean, snowboarding wasn't a thing.
I picked these up from the English. They're called skis.
I get drugged behind the cart and buggy. Because you've seen the GIF.
Oh, man. Dude, I'm so stoked to be doing a show with you tonight. We've, like you said, we've never done a one-on-one.
No, we haven't. You know, it's funny is that our interaction on Twitter, too, it's always like, you know, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Which just, I mean, no, not Fear and Loathing. We're at the Buffalo Room. Sorry.
Yeah.
And, that is, you know, we talk about it all the time, but if you haven't seen the movie, that is pure Bill Murray. He did Hunter S. Thompson better than Johnny Depp did.
I think so.
And all he did was play himself with a cigarette. So, but no, he did Thompson really well in that one.
Somebody the other day on Twitter compared me to Thompson. They
I can see that.
They said something along the lines of, we don't have Hunter S. Thompson anymore, but we do have a Mickey Blowtorch. I think it might have been Flinny. If you don't know who Flinny okay. is, everybody knows yeah. who Flinny is.
Yeah, yeah. Is it, no, I can see that. I yeah, can totally see that. I can
totally see that.
Except you don't write.
I do write.
Oh, do you?
Dude,
see, now we're learning.
I've done a lot of writing. In fact, I've done consulting and some ghostwriting for Janie Mack, the author.
Author Janie Mack?
Author Janie Mack. So, yeah, that's her. Something She's that so I never really talk about it. That's just kind of like one of my inner, I guess, personal secrets that I don't know. Maybe it doesn't interest me all that much to tell people about, or maybe I just keep that to myself. But, yeah, I'm a total writer, dude.
It's a side gig.
Side gig. Yeah, I'm, you know, like Guitar George. I know all the chords.
So, and that one, again, just this was another Mickey and mine interaction on Twitter. If you know, if you're not familiar with Frog's Leap, they do covers of almost everything. And they did one with Mary Spender doing the Sultans of Swing. I actually like it better than the original.
That was an impressive cover. To be honest with you, that's one of those songs that you don't really want to fucking touch. You know, that's like a song that's in the Holy Bible. There's just some right. shit that you don't touch. And Sultans of Swing is pretty important on the musical spectrum, I believe, especially mm-hmm. for that fucking face-melting guitar solo. You know, Mark right. Knopfler is such an underrated guitarist. The Dire Straits are so underrated, and I can go on and on
really
and on
are.
About them. I think.
Yeah, no, they totally are. They're one of those things. It's like they got to enjoy some of the fame, like when Tom Petty did the Running Down the Dream.
Yep.
You know, in that era of MTV, Dire Straits got to do the Money for Nothing with I Killed You with a Meme and the other night, and a couple other
that
ones, and they redid Sultan's a Swing for Baseball. But yeah, that was just kind of like they just hit a quick peak in there.
But, you know, they did get immortalized, and they do have this. They were pretty much the opening band for MTV. You know, MTV, that whole I Want My MTV, you hear it in their mm-hmm. advertising now, even though they're not even a music channel anymore. But that music video, that song in MTV is probably, you know, the crown jewel of the MTV empire. So they did get that. But however, I still believe that Brothers in Arms is probably the most underrated album of all time. And that motherfucker was like some platinum shit.
Yeah.
The fact that it's not talked about as much as it should have been is it hit on a pop level. They didn't hit on their skills. If that makes sense.
But it totally makes sense. I mean, yeah, and the fact that, you know, it was definitely geared for a MTV generation rather than a classic rock generation.
Yes.
You know, there was
they were
more
a transitionary band for us.
Yeah.
Awesome. We are so off the rail. You know what? It's not Aggie. It's me. I'm the one who gets everybody off the fucking rails. I got G way off topic, fucking interloping on his political articles that he was reading, and now we're not even anywhere close to what we were going to talk about to begin with. Fucking
well, this is what Rick and I do on the show, too. We just get sidetracked.
Oh, I love
it. So this is perfect. Yeah.
It's okay, I'm going to even sidetrack us even worse.
Okay.
Do you ever lay in bed and go through like an hour of thoughts? And then you're like, how the fuck did I even get on this? And then so you start backtracking, you know, thought A led to thought B led to thought 3A, and so on and so forth until you find like the original patient zero thought.
It's okay. Even better. I used to have a roommate and I, we used to just sit there and just bong rip all day long. And then we'd be zoning out watching TV or something. And then, you know, one of us would be like, okay, what? He's all right. I got to walk you back. And we would do that thing that you just described, but like through the whole serpentine stoned thought process, you know, going all the way back to, you know, some random commercial that had happened 2 hours before. And there was just dead silence in the room while we were zoning out on TV. And yeah,
that kind
I'm
of
totally with you on
is
that.
Hilarious. Because, like, the original thought is so unimportant, and then you end up having, like, some incredible existential thinking on behalf of, like, thinking of, like, a fucking Circle K scratch-off ticket.
Right.
And then it ends up into, like, just, like, amazing thought. So, that I totally understand what you're saying there, dude.
Oh, I won the scratcher, and what am I going to do if I win the scratcher? And then that turns into, well, you know, I can't piss it all away on hookers and blow, and, you know, I'll give a little bit to charity, and, you know, it's a really good charity. Yeah, that whole thought process leads you down to...
And then you're trying to come up with, like, the longer-lasting light bulb in your head.
Right. Yeah, and then by the time you're in, the earth is definitely flat.
On the fucking turtle's back.
Right.
So one of the things that you and I have in common, and I think draws us to each other the most, is our big love on conspiracy, paranormal, and fringe theory.
Oh yeah, that's you know, when Rick approached me about doing Jux, I just kind of like, you know, we always talk about it. It's like I said, yeah, that show format's never worked with co-hosts. You can't do it. You know, I'll come on as a guest every now and then. And I did an initial Mandela Effect episode. And then, but I was wrong. I'll freely admit I was wrong. And Rick and I have really had a lot of fun studying with Jux. But yeah, I mean, hit me with some of your conspiracy theories, man. I got on all of them.
Oh, man. So, okay. Well, let's just have a disclaimer here. These are theories, thoughts.
Right.
Not necessarily anything I believe. I believe in some crazy shit. Like, you know, let's just fucking break the ice. I think Hitler fucking survived and we let him live because he gave us alien technology. Just going to throw that out there. Get that out of the way. You know,
I got to expand on that. Is it from the Nazi excursion to the South Pole?
We're not even getting there yet.
Okay.
You're talking about Admiral Byrd's expedition, Operation High Jump, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're not even fucking there, but I'm sure it's related. You know, and that's just a generalization. I've got this weird logical thought process that works out in my mind. And it's always going with the question, why? Why would we do this? Why would we do this? That doesn't make sense. Why would we do this? What's in it for me? When you start asking those questions, you can start coming up with plausible answers. Did you watch that Hunting Hitler show that was on, I want to say Discovery, about maybe 3 or 4 years ago? It was actually...
I'm familiar with it. I didn't watch it, but I'm familiar with it. And I kind of like peripherally paid attention to it.
So you understand the whole theory behind it, right? Hitler escape via whatever means. And they had like 3 seasons of this show that just has enormous amounts of evidence upon evidence that Hitler possibly made it out of Germany.
Got down to Argentina, Brazil,
all of that area. You know, Mengele fucking made it down there, and he was a high-profile guy, too. So, you know, and the Germans had an amazing subsurface submarine force. The Luftwaffe was good at what they did. And two, their smuggling program that they had for Nazi officials, which I find kind of interesting to begin with, that they had a contingency plan. So that tells me that they knew that they were doing some wrong shit to begin with. If you thought you were doing right shit, why would you have this intricate contingency plan? Anyway, they had like this SS network set up in South America before the war even happened.
Yeah, and they were kind of everywhere too. I mean, the thing in Raiders where they're in the Himalayas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they were in the Himalayas. I mean, there was a whole big thing where... You know, that the whole premise behind Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, Hitler was obsessed with occult artifacts.
Yes.
That's true. They were all over the Himalayas.
It was
yeah,
and
that's
very
actually
bizarre.
Where the initial Yeti sightings came from.
All that.
Outside of the...
Himmler was huge into the occult, too, which is, you know, a testament to Hitler being into the occult. All this weird shit. I mean, we could have a show for hours and hours and hours on the subject. But... The show Hunting Hitler showcased all of these different little pieces of evidence and testimonies, this and that, and it was very interesting the way they pieced it together. In fact, the FB fucking I, you know, I'm not giving them much credence or props, but this was on their radar in the 50s, and they were looking into it. The producers of the show managed to get all of these redacted FBI reports that were, you know, closely following Mossad, with all of their shit that they were doing in South and Central America with the ex-Nazis that were down there and all of that. But the U.S. was following that. But there was a big thing about Hitler being down there that we were that was super on our radar. So my whole line of thinking is, if Hitler was down there and we knew about it, why the fuck wouldn't we have gone after the number one public enemy of the entire fucking world?
The biggest asshole.
The biggest asshole. The reason why we all ended up in a fucking world war. Why people were never born. Why Judy from Anytown, USA didn't have her high school boo come back to her. You know, that war really, really stuck a bayonet in America's stomach and twisted it. While we went out there and fought the battles that we fought and everything that we did out there. Why would we have let the number one motherfucker go if he had escaped to Central or South America? So, just, you know, and I'm not even going to get into the details or anything like that. There's just too much information to go over. Why? When I ask myself, and I was saying earlier, you ask yourself, why? What's in it for me? What's in it for me? What's in it for me? Look at that on an American standpoint. If he had something to offer, what could he have offered for us to turn the other cheek and let him be, but something like alien fucking technology, dude.
The bell.
Oh, the fucking the Glocka.
Yeah,
that plays into this too. They were on the fucking frontier of French science, and of, you know, we can go to the Operation High Jump down in Antarctica and all that. There's just so much shit to really cover. But I, you know, out of all the things he could have given us, to where we would have given him a pass, or probably what more than likely happened, closely monitored a miserable existence from an absolute piece of shit human to make sure that they didn't go out of parameters. But the only thing that I could think of that could have been offered would have been something as significant as alien technology.
Now, the only thing that stops me in that, at least until the 80s, you know, if he had died prior to, say, I mean, the mid 80s, I'm with you. But in the mid 80s, I don't think the FBI or even the U.S. government could have stopped the Simon Wiesenthal Center, because it, a lot of people don't get it now. But back during the 80s, Nazi hunting was a big thing.
Oh,
I mean, there
shit,
was every week there was another trial of some, you know, like guard at fucking, you know, whatever would be caught living in Boca and
or Detroit.
You know, then,
yeah.
Yeah. And Mossad just throw a bag over his head and smuggle him back to Israel.
So that's definitely a big concern in this. But if you go back and think about it, look how hard it was for them to catch Eichmann.
Okay, yeah.
That was a pretty big deal. They never caught Mengele. Never.
No.
I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they know he was there, but they never caught him because he never returned for trial.
Okay, I think you might be right on that one.
So if those two high-profile motherfuckers, Mengele, the fucking angel of fucking death, escapes, and he's still allegedly going to, like, Dinko Doi and doing fucking experiments on twin genealogy and shit like that, he's actively walking around and moving around. The fucking whatever country he was in has got a file on him from his stay there. They never caught him. Eichmann was hard as shit to catch. That was a huge fucking operation to catch Eichmann, and barely fucking worked. And if these guys, if Hitler would have had the utmost protection from the Nazi party and contingency plans and this and that, to the like Eichmann and Mengele were probably on their fucking own. You know, half the shit that they went through probably was budgeted by them and came out of their pockets, and maybe they had little to no help actually getting there. Hitler would have been the fucking baby. They would have made sure that he got down there. Yeah, the football. So
carry that to the end zone. Get him there.
Maybe that Mossad was not able to track him down. I could see that.
You know, as you think about, well, you know, he was in Brazil. Brazil was pretty vast, and at the time, still pretty rainforesty. So yeah, I mean, Sean Connery couldn't find some fucking ants down there. So
you ever lost anything?
Your keys, your purse, Bronx. I lost the cure to the fucking plague of the 20th century.
So, you know, that's just one of my crazy ones. And I didn't even mean to get off on this tangent, but yeah, I could totally see us looking the other way for alien technology.
Sure. I mean, especially if, like, the stuff that we got in 50, I mean, okay, even then, before 1954, we really didn't have, you know, or no, it was a 46 that was Roswell. I'm trying to remember.
47.
Roswell, 46, 47. All right. So, you know, we cut them loose in 44 before we get our own.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know, we probably could have even gone down there and exterminated him when he no longer served a purpose and covered up our fucking tracks in the process.
You just quietly put him in a spider hole and call it good?
Yeah. All it would have taken was a couple boys from Langley.
Yeah.
Which didn't exist at the time. We were probably still OSS. But yeah, 1947 was Roswell. And look how technology exponentially has grown since the Roswell crash.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people was like, well, with Operation Paperclip, you know, we got, you know, Wernher von Braun, and, you know, we got a lot of that fringe science that the Nazis brought to the table.
Yeah.
And also, one thing, you know, sidetracking real quick, have you noticed that all the best conspiracies go end up with the Nazis? Everything from MK Ultra to UFOs.
I didn't know that there was MK Ultra involvement with the Nazis. I thought that was strictly USCIA.
Well,
I haven't heard their tie-in.
A lot of the work they got came via Paperclip.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, hey, that's kind of cool. Let's expand on that.
And we should revisit Paperclip at another time, too, because the area that I live in, El Paso, hosted a huge amount of the paperclip scientists that worked out at Alamogordo and White Sands and Fort Bliss and McGregor Range and whatnot. We had a huge German population here.
Yeah, you always wonder where. Well, that one made sense, but you know, like, I've got where I'm at a huge Basque population. What the fuck are the Basque doing in California? But. So
Eric,
okay, you know, we got to do a break.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we're actually going to do a little bit of the, or we'll just get sidetracked and fuck it off. One of the two.
All right.
But anyway, everybody go refill your drinks, smoke them if you got them, and we'll be back in a couple.
We'll be back.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's largest mortgage lender. Spring will be here soon, so if buying a new home is on your to-do list, right now is the time to call Quicken Loans. Learn about which mortgage options make sense for you and get a jump on your competition. With our exclusive Rate Shield approval, the low rate you lock today is protected for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. With a Rate Shield approval, if rates go up, your low rate stays locked. But if rates go down, you get that new, even lower rate. Either way, you win. Talk to us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com to take advantage. Here's another great reason to work with us. For a record 9 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Again, to lock in today's low mortgage interest rate and get the security of our exclusive Rate Shield approval, call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for the new Sesame Ginger Glazed Chicken Signature Wrap. How would you like it?
I'll take a...
Sports announcer at home?
Yeah, how'd you...
We just know.
My wife picks up the new Signature Wrap. It's got double the rotisserie-style chicken mixed with a sesame ginger glaze. She appears annoyed at me, but she shrugs it off. Those sweet and savory flavors are calling her name. She lifts the wrap and... She takes the bite! Incredible! And now she's closing the door on my... Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Double meat basement, average 6-inch sub.
I'm Little Teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle and here is my spout.
No, Dad, like this. When I get all steamed up, then I shout, tip me over and
pour me out.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Welcome back. I am one half of the crew, Mr. Ordy Packard. The other half of the crew, Mr. Rick Robinson, is having internet shit, so I got in Mickey Blowtorch to do some Mickey shit.
Oh,
so,
boy.
Mickey.
You guys are lucky that you contacted me before I got too intoxicated. There's like a 50-50 if you contact me after 5 p.m., I'm going to be indisposed.
It's like winning the lottery.
I'm grateful to I got to produce two cool shows tonight. Thank you, G, for inviting me to help you out there, and then you and I get to have this awesome conversation.
Yeah, as you know, it's kind of stuff that we've been chomping at the bit to do, but the situation has never lent itself prior to now. Though we could do it anytime. You just want to, hey, Ordy, it's Saturday. You want to do a? Yeah, okay.
Did you ever listen to the time I had John Katz from the John Katz Show? Guest host on He Said, She Said. And we just went off the fucking hip on paranormal and everything, conspiracy, fringe, all that shit. We're actually talking about putting a show together and doing kind of like a stoner science type thing.
Okay.
Cause he's a big old pothead too. And anybody that knows me, I'm no stranger to that Mary Jane, but I heard
you have smoked the Mexican lettuce.
Absolutely. The Hispanic Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
But, we were talking about doing like a stoner science paranormal show, and I don't see why we couldn't incorporate you into it.
Sure. And you know who's good value on that too is Jeff. Al.
Oh, that's right. Jeff's got a show.
I mean, Al, the whole idea, Juck started. Rick had no material and he was just going off on an AOTR on an America Off the Rails one night. And Al called in from work and they started just talking paranormal shit. And that's when Rick got the idea to do, you know, let's do a paranormal show. And then that's how the whole thing kind of just snowballed out from there.
That's fucking cool, dude. I'm a super closeted, well, I'm not really that closeted about it. I'm pretty open, but I'm a total paranormal geek, dude. I'm the Fox Mulder. I was that guy in high school and I still am that guy.
I've always had to pay, even like when research was hard, you know, it was like we all had, I think we had In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy when we were kids. There was, a couple other shows kind of like that. But yeah, that's, I mean, getting, but it's not like now with the internet and, you know, when you can find anything,
yeah,
you can go down any rabbit hole you want. But the funny thing about that too, is that it's like paranormal has become pretty mainstream now. I mean, one of the first juxtapositions, Rick asked, you know, when did UFOs become, you know, socially acceptable and why didn't he get the memo? And it was because, you know, the week before he was watching Tucker Carlson and Tucker was going on about UFOs all night. It's like, okay, so I mean, this is like when you and I are talking about timelines,
mm-hmm.
and that actually really in the 2016 campaign, that's when, I mean, I'd known about the Mandela effect and I'd, you know, really kind of dug into it, but that's when everybody on social media goes, well, in this timeline that makes perfect sense. So
it
there's
does.
Two things. It's like either this timeline or the writers have really lost the plot with 2016.
I just learned about the Mandela effect. I guess it's this year. It has to be this year. And it was there was a movie on Netflix. I guess it was called The Mandela Effect. I really don't remember. It wasn't that great of a movie, but it introduced me to the fucking concept, right? And then I don't remember what happened, but I ended up in the chat room on your show. I don't think I was on your show that particular time, but I was in the chat room and you guys talked about the Mandela effect. And ever since then, I'm like, I DM you with like creepy shit that happens to me. And it happens to me more and more frequently now that I'm sure that there's a, like a scientific name or a theory for when something becomes obvious to you, then you start seeing it more and more and it doesn't seem so, random or, you know,
it's on your radar. I know there is a trend, but it's like, you know, when people start to notice it, like every time they look at the clock, it's 8:11 or something like that.
It's a phenomenon unto itself.
Yeah. But no, you're right. It's like now that not only do I notice, like, man, you know, am I conscious of Mandela effects even more? I highlight, you know, one of the things with Mandela effects is the byproduct is the artifact, where for a time, both things exist, you know, where it's like a good example of that is like in this timeline, which I don't remember, and it's just completely alien to me and it blows my mind every time I see it. The JFK limo has a middle bench.
What?
Yeah, there was in the front, you had Governor Connally and the driver.
Uh-huh.
In the middle, you had Connally's wife. And in the back, you had Jackie and
Jack.
John. Yeah, there's a middle seat in it. I've never visually, I still can't visually process.
Wasn't the guy in the white cowboy hat sitting reverse?
No. That's Connally was turning his head.
Governor Connally was in reverse to the president. Wasn't he facing Jackie and JFK?
That's when he turned his head after the first shot. Yeah,
but that was on a metal bench.
Yeah,
that's weird.
Now there's a middle bench in there. Hey, Jeff, I know that you've dug it up for me in the past. See if you can post it in chat for me. I'd really appreciate it. But I can't process that because it's always been in my timeline where I'm from.
Wait, is the metal bench in between the two seats?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, Connally, he was by himself, right? There wasn't anybody sitting next to him.
Right. His wife wasn't in the limo.
It was just him and John and Jackie.
Right. But now there's a middle bench that Connally's wife was in. But the thing is, when talking about the artifacts, you go to some automotive museums and they have the two bench limo, the convertible limo, you know, the one that we know. And, you know, they'll play it off and they say, oh, you know, that's actually the vice president's limo. The real limo has a middle bench. I don't remember that at all. Period. It just, it, and every time I see it, it just, it jars me.
Let's give a brief description of the Mandela Effect for those that are listening that aren't familiar with what we're talking about.
Okay. You want to, or you want me to?
You do it.
Okay. Yeah, just got posted up in the limo. Oh, yeah. Got posted up in chat.
There's a limo.
So, okay. So the Mandela Effect is, that is, when a large group of society remembers things differently than they actually occurred. The reason why it has the Mandela Effect is there's a lot of people that insist that Nelson Mandela died in prison in the 80s. Then there's another group that believe that he died in the, after he got out of prison while he was president of South Africa. And then he recently, in everybody else, he recently passed away during the Obama administration. So it's, you have these three different timelines, as it were, where people, I mean, it's, there is a South African school book that mentions Nelson Mandela passing away in prison.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
And that's, it's like, you know, was it like when CNN, when they accidentally blurred out a bit, but it's a, it was a history book that people remember. So this is culture and society having different memories of the same collective events.
And it doesn't stop at Mandela. It goes on and on and on to like the Monopoly guy, the Berenstein Bears, all these different Curious George, all these commonplace things in our lives that half of us remember one way, half of us remember the other way.
Right, and it really, you notice it more when you pay attention to pop culture.
Yes. Like,
for instance, everybody knows when Sally Field won the Golden Globe, she says, "You like me. You really, really like me." It's a gif. It's referenced in The Mask. It's, everybody knows it, but that's not what she actually said. She, according in this timeline, she says, "You like me right now. You like me." And if you watch the video of it, that's what she says. But that is not referenced anywhere in pop culture that she said it that way.
So,
and it doesn't even make sense with the way that she's moving her head. I mean, you can visually see it, and it just doesn't track.
When Ordy and I DM each other now, it's with examples of what we think we're going through Mandela effects in our present situations. And you really start to see it more and more once you start to notice. Something that I guess this is kind of a present conversation or present Mandela effect item that you could relay to. Have you watched Yellowstone at all? I know everybody is watching Yellowstone.
Everybody is watching it right now. I am in the I refuse to watch it because everybody's watching it. I know I'm going to watch it.
I am the same dude. I am just like you. I will refuse to do anything that's popular and wait till it's not
popular
to
Titanic.
Do it. I got my first blowjob at Titanic.
Okay.
So going to Yellowstone, right? And this is a good one. This is the biggest one I've had in a while. My girl and I, we got Yellowstone on Blu-ray because we started watching it on Paramount. And we're like, oh, whoa, we got to watch this shit. So I bought all three fucking seasons, and we were like spending our Saturdays not answering our phones, curtains drawn, neighbors didn't know we were home, watching fucking Yellowstone because it was so deliciously good. And there was an episode where they bought this young man a cowboy hat because he was wearing a stupid cowboy hat. And it was kind of like a big emotional present, you know, a feel good episode. And somebody in the cast or in the script, and you know, don't cancel me for saying this because it was actually on the Yellowstone script. They said, "Jimmy, retarded scarecrow was not a good look." And I remember the person on the show that said it was this Native American stripper that they brought in to work on the ranch as a cowboy. And that's how I remember that. So the girl and I went back and we rewatched these episodes to catch up because we were going to start again. And this other dude says that line. And it was like, no fucking way. I totally remember the chick saying that. And I mean, it sits in your gut, dude. You fucking know that that's not what you saw originally. or
right.
And then you start second guessing yourself, and that's when it starts to fade away.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a lot of people, you know, they'll chalk it up to false memories, but
you had a big one the other day that you messaged
me about.
Yeah,
man, this one was actually, this falls under false memory, because I talked about it with you, and I talked about it with Jess, because we also do Mandela Effect conversations with each other, too. This one was, I distinctly remember the OJ high-speed chase happening in the 89. I remember it specifically because I was in college. I had the same roommate. I remember him drinking a 40 of Miller High Life, eating a Hershey's bar because that was his thing. A brand new wood chessboard on the table because he rage quit and ripped the cardboard one in half when we were playing. All of it. I distinctly remember hyper real. In vivid living color. And I'm talking to you and I talked to Jess about it. And they're like, and you both said, no, that was mid-90s, dude. I'm like, no, it can't be. It was 89. I remember every facet of it. Except for what I forgot was the same guy who was my college roommate crashed on my house for 6 months when he was going through a divorce. And that's when the same, everything, well, I mean, you know, the chessboard was the same chessboard because after, you
were,
know.
Were you guys in the same room?
Was that?
Were you guys in the same room, like the same domicile when you watched the OJ verdict as you were?
No, totally different. It's like this when we were going to college. Okay. It was out in Palm Springs.
But
this
was
time
it similar,
was in Vegas,
or
but still
was it
hot.
Like you like very different?
It was very different. You
okay,
know, it was
I
like,
find that
I didn't,
fascinating.
I didn't have 80s pot smoker. You know, skateboard. Yeah. You know, accoutrement everywhere. I mean, I was a bartender in Vegas. It was very Vegas bartender look, and. It was just the chessboard was the same. The TV was new, but it was just the chessboard, him drinking the 40 Miller High Life with the Hershey's chocolate bar. But what had happened, the 89 one, that was the Loma Prieta earthquake. That was the World Series earthquake.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's so both of them very, you know, like very important moments in history.
So,
but they had combined in my head
here
to be the same event.
Here's my question to that, because I find this one very fascinating. I remember we talked that night, and you were actually slightly distraught about it. This was a big memory, real big.
Yeah.
And so the things that I'm curious about the most is, A, two super-duper different environments that you were in when you guys watched this together. Okay. These were two super duper big news stories that were totally alien from each other to begin with. There are some parallels. Was he drinking the 40 and eating the Hershey bar in both of?
Yeah.
Because that was his ritual, right? His ritual.
Right. That was his thing. Yeah. That was okay. His, you know, chill out, you know, day's over, you know, turn on the TV thing.
All right. This is what I want to ask next. And this is going to be interesting the way you answer that. When you told me that you were going to give him a call because it was really, you know, bothering you and eating at you. And I was like super curious. So I pushed that too. And you called him. And then when you pose this question to him and he explained to you, no, we were over here instead. Did your memory instantaneously change? Was it like with the Wizard of Oz when it goes from black and white to fucking color, dude? How was that?
No, I still reject it. I've just accepted that as the reality.
You rejected it.
In my head. No, I in my head, I still reject it. I have to.
So the memory didn't clear up. Your
memory
didn't.
Verbal,
it wasn't, you know, like the curtain was lifted and all of a sudden you remembered it correctly.
No.
Okay.
No,
so that's
nothing like that at all.
That's fantastic that you say that too. Because that kind of supports your point that this could have been a Mandela effect. If you reject all of that new memory instead of being like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Which
I think,
you know,
I toned out the rest of the room and I was just focused on that. This is an important event. Here's my roommate. Here's this guy I have known, my high school friend, college roommate, you know, through history has been a focal point in my life as well. And here's him doing his thing. Here is a TV news event happening. And in my mind, it has just merged those two events together. And I cannot pull them apart. When I think about it, like when I was telling you about it, when I was talking to Jess about it, I have to like suspend my disbelief to hammer it out. Because my mind is still rejecting that those were two different events.
And I find that fantastic because that fucking supports the Mandela effect, dude. Your mind is rejecting the new memory. That's why I asked you if like there was a curtain lifted, because if it was, then I'd be like, okay, false memory. Because sometimes somebody will shed light on something and you're like, oh, yeah. You didn't have that oh, yeah moment, dude.
No, I didn't. I was just like, nah, bullshit. And he's like, no, seriously. I'm like, okay, whatever.
That goes to support the fucking Mandela effect.
But, and the thing is, and that's like, you know, you talk about false memories. There was a big study done with people who were on ground zero on 9/11.
Uh-huh.
And they interviewed them like in the days and weeks after it happened. And then they interviewed them 10 years later. And, you know, they said, well, you said this. And then the person said, I don't know why I said that. That didn't happen. That didn't happen that way. I wasn't there. Yeah, I was over here. I wasn't there. I don't remember. I don't know why I remember why I said that at that time. So the mind is a weird thing, bro.
It's super weird. I was taking some bong rips and just thinking this afternoon. Dreams. How incredible are they when you just start thinking about what they really are?
Yeah,
it's like a holodeck of the mind that we're transported to, and for our mind to be able to have like this power to put us into a totally fabricated landscape with characters and interactions, and we're living it, dude. There's no doubt about it. We're living it. It's like virtual reality. That's impressive fucking shit.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and your mind just does that so it doesn't get bored while your body rests.
So the mind is super incredible. What do you think about my UPS thing, dude?
That is, okay, on one level, I think that it's kind of like, you know, I talked about, you know, when you start noticing 8/11, then you notice it everywhere. But on the other hand, in, you know, with your timing and everything, that, you know, you just happen to be coming out when they're all, when they're doing their thing. But if I remember right, you've said it's not like a consistent time. It's happening at different points of the day too.
Yes. And yeah, in different areas of the town. So what?
So go into that. That's, yeah.
This is actually really fascinating
too, because I was thinking of it as like, okay, well maybe, but then as you built onto it saying, no, this isn't happening the same time or the same place. It's happening everywhere.
So my workday is very inconsistent. My schedule is whatever I want it to be. I don't have to do the same commute every single day. Some days I work half of the day from my house. Some days I go into work. Well, you know, it's just kind of whatever. So I don't know exactly when this started happening or when I started noticing it. It's been within the last 2 to 3 years. There's been a couple times where I'll be driving to work between 8 and 10 a.m., and I never leave the house at the same time because, you know, I've got a fluid schedule. So I don't have to be there on the dot. It's just whenever the fuck I leave. There's been a couple times I've gotten on the freeway and I'll pass a UPS delivery truck. And then maybe a couple hundred yards ahead of that, I'll pass another UPS delivery truck. And then all of a sudden, there'll be three more UPS delivery trucks I see with like in the same quarter mile area of the freeway. Some of them are driving like in like three in a row, and then there'll be like one ahead of me, and then there'll be like one behind us that overtakes us. It's just like
now,
a really unnatural.
Do you live near a hub?
It's possible. I'm not sure.
I'm thinking, but even then,
I don't
UPS
think so, dude.
Is pretty rigid on their depart time.
They,
you know,
are.
It's not like you're talking about when your start schedule is fluid. UPS, you know, they have a route, a schedule, and usually generally something catastrophic has to happen for them to fuck that up.
So it's happened a couple different times like that, and to the point where obviously I'm like, hey, this is kind of weird. So I remember seeing it the first time, and I'm like, you know, that's kind of odd. And then, you know, maybe a year and a half later, it happens again. I'm on the freeway at some random unspecified time, and, you know, I'll merge and there'll be like two UPS trucks, and they're the delivery trucks, you know, the ones with the sliding doors, just the regular standard UPS truck. Yeah. The brown truck,
Dark Rider.
And so like I'll merge on the freeway, there'll be two, and then I'll speed up cause they're not, you know, going fast enough, and I'll hit speed limit, and then I'll pass three more, like within less than a fucking quarter mile from where these other two were. And then another one will merge onto the freeway. to where it's just a weird amount, man. Like a lot of fucking UPS trucks.
It's like, oh shit, I'm sorry. It's like, you know, the two guys from Quantico pizza delivery vans surrounding you.
Yeah.
But UPS.
So it got to the point where I messaged you the other day where I'm like, dude, check this out. And I got onto the fucking freeway. There was like three fucking UPS trucks. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, this is weird at this point. And then all these other UPS trucks. Like, I probably saw maybe 7 or 8 UPS trucks on that particular morning.
Well, I know you pinged me about at least 3 times in the last 2 months about it.
So
it's happened again.
And then... like 2 or 3 days ago, I went to another place. I've got several different office locations that I work out of, and some more than others. And I went to this other one, and it wasn't on the freeway. It was on surface road. So I pull up to this fucking traffic light, and there's two UPS trucks sitting at the red light. And I chuckled. I was like, oh, that's some crazy shit, right? So the light had just barely turned green when I had pulled up for them. And so they moved forward and watching all the traffic go. That light turns red again and two fucking UPS trucks pull up to the same fucking light. And my light turns green. I proceed forward and then like 150 yards down the road on the right-hand side was another UPS truck trying to make a right-hand turn onto the fucking street, dude. I don't know what the fuck is going on with that shit, but, like, it's to the point where it's kind of, like, comical because why the fuck are there so many UPS trucks, man?
Yeah, and that's, and like you said, it keeps happening to you. It's like I said, you've pinged me, like, 3 times over the last couple months, and it's well beyond
the realm of normalcy, right? Like, how many times would this happen to a particular person in their life?
Well, and not just that, the fact that it's like, you know, okay, you, using the 8-11 analogy, or the most common is 11-11, that's like, okay, that happens every now and then, and it's because it's always going to happen twice a day. There's no way, shape, or form that it can't not happen. With your UPS thing, though, that is just, that's the universe trolling you, dude. Not only that, because it's like, I mean, UPS is not that dense. Everywhere.
Yeah,
even if you're in the city, they're not that. I mean,
they don't travel in convoys, dude. They've got like routes and areas, and you know, I'm sure they don't all leave the distribution centers at once and be like, hey, let's drive in a convoy,
right?
Like the likelihood.
Some CW McCall blast, and let's do this.
And what are the odds of like 8 or 9 being on the same stretch of road I'm on at any given time, dude? It's just bizarre, and to me, I start getting that feeling, that rejection feeling, kind of like when you called your roommate up and he told you that memory that you had was kind of false, but you're rejecting it. When I start to see these kind of weird things happening in my daily life, I start to pay more attention. And of course, it totally adds into like some paranoia shit. Not like 2021 needs any more of that, right?
For sure.
I don't know what to think. I'm to the point in my life where, you know, we've talked about the simulation theory and things like that. I know that there's something off. I just don't know what the fuck it is.
And no, the simulation meshes well with the Mandela effect.
Very much
because
so.
Because those two, and you know, it's been...
Well, when you play a computer game and something gets fucked up, what do? Reset to the last save point.
Yeah.
Right?
And then things are, big events are the same, but the little events, the NPC you wax, everything else, change.
Yeah. Because so, you change your parameters that you're working towards, and that, in fact, you know, has that trickle butterfly effect that comes down to us.
Yeah. It was said the way to prove whether we're in a simulation or not is if we never have a simulation. If we as mankind never develop a simulation, that means we're in one, because the processing power of running two concurrent simulations wouldn't be possible.
Couldn't be.
The simulation could never run a simulation of itself.
Oh, fuck.
So if we never develop a simulation, we are the simulation. Think about that one.
Well, there is The Sims. Reticulating splines.
Second Life.
Dude, you know
what I was
so happy
the other day when we were talking in DM and about Tobin's Spirit Guide.
Mm-hmm.
Spades,
I got
catalog,
it like 2 days ago.
Spades Catalog was the other one I couldn't think of. I'll check for Zool and the usual literature. Tobin's Spirit Guide, you know, Spades Catalog too. That one doesn't exist yet.
This one was pretty cool. I guess it was it came out in 2016. Which I guess was that's when they re-released the Lady Ghostbusters, which I kind of had a crush on Kate McKinnon in, by the way. I'm not going to lie and fight that. I thought it was okay in its own right. Like, if you looked at it in its own thing and didn't really incorporate it into the franchise, but, you know, that's a conversation for another time. Anyway, I bought myself Tobin's Spirit Guide for my birthday. It is pretty cool.
Yeah. No, and... I saw there was a deal on it too. There was Tobin's Spirit Guide, Handbook for the Recently Deceased, and the Necronomicon Ex Mortis.
You have to cough when you're reading the incantation.
Well, I said most of it, kind of.
Fucking Bruce Campbell. Those are definitely ones I want to add.
Yeah. You're the one. I've talked about the. I know I sent you the link to it. Did you listen to the episode that we had Al on where we were talking about rock and roll, Tales from the Rock and Roll Graveyard?
No, the last one I listened was you guys were doing the Book of Judas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was just last week. That was one I've been wanting to do for a while. We did one a couple of years ago. It was all about the mysteries of your rock and roll, you know, Club 27 and things like that.
Uh-huh.
That one, I think you'd really get into. I had so much fun with Al on that one. I just let him go. You know, it all starts with a Robert Johnson, Hellhounds on Their Tail kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, making a deal with the devil.
That's like every fucking rock and roll mythos, dude.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. And it's carried all the way through. But, you know, that's... I brought that up for some reason. Oh, when we were talking about music earlier, and again, doing that whole head-mind journey.
Yeah.
When we were talking about that earlier, when you mentioned the Dire Straits, I was thinking, you know, it was another good album was Pink Floyd, the one that came out at that time with Learning to Fly on it, because everybody talks about Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
But nobody talks about, that was a good...
The Wall was my jam when I was in high school, man. I loved to fucking blaze the fuck out and just put my big old Koss headphones on, you know, those big motherfuckers. And I would listen to The Wall, dude, from start to finish and just fucking tune the world out.
Yeah, we used to just take mushroom and watch the movie as often as we could.
Fuck yeah, dude. Shrooms. Yeah. Ah, good times. Yeah, but, you know, it's a good thing that you and I are separated by a couple years because we probably would have brought down the establishment.
or be in prison together.
or started a brand new branch of the FBI called the X-Files.
Or religion.
Or a religion or a cult.
Yeah, there we go.
So,
man, this was so much fun. What else you got?
You know what? What's your other favorite flavors? We beat the shit out of the Mandela effect because it's hot and heavy right now. Okay, I shared with you my Hitler alien technology fucking big tinfoil hat one. What's one that you're kind of embarrassed to bring up in company?
Okay, well, there's the one I joke about, which is a twofer. Which is the are you familiar with Finland Isn't Real?
With what?
Finland Isn't Real.
No,
and this guy, it was kind of like a Reddit troll that took on a life of its own, where, you know, he did this whole riff about how Finland isn't real, that it's open water between Russia and Sweden, and it's all part of, because the argument is that no country can constantly be the best at everything always. And Nokia phones are the most popular phone in the world. Do you know anybody who owns one?
I still have my first Nokia.
Okay, but now?
No, I didn't even know they were still a thing.
Yeah, and that's it, and what it is, it's it. He convinced the internet that Finland is a myth in order for Japan to have unrestricted fishing in a part of the world, and that's why the Trans-Siberia Railway ships Nokia phones everywhere, and it's just this really weird, convoluted story, and people started believing it, and it was just kind of like, no, man, I just made that up. I just pulled that out of my ass, but it became a really big internet beyond a meme where people were, when he said, I made it up, they said, no, you didn't. Here's where you're right. Kind of thing. So
why would Japan go all the way around Europe to go fishing there?
Because of all the regulations against fishing. You know, yeah. So yeah, the world was getting kind of pissed off about how they do their fishing. So they get unrestricted.
This could actually probably be tied into Mandela, dude.
Sure. Well, one of the things with Mandela effect is that we can do it on the shows because you don't have the visuals to do it, is that a lot of people talk about they remember New Zealand being above Australia, not below it.
I always remember below.
Yeah, and I do too.
Maybe that's Tasmania. Or off to the side somewhere, you know, it's fucking sucking the Australian titty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tasmania's always been there, but New Zealand was, anyway, so people remember it in different places. They remember the western seaboard lining up better. You go from California down through Argentina. It doesn't, do that massive shift off to the east that it does now. And just, a lot of things like that. Huh? Like, where we are in the universe has changed, too, or in the galaxy. We used to be pretty far out on the western spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy. Now we're not really in the middle, but closer to the middle.
But can't that be attributed to better understanding and technology with space telescopes and all of that stuff?
Well, I mean, I could see that within maybe a few thousand light years. But I mean, this is significant. This is how did you fuck that up?
Maybe the universe is moving a lot faster than we thought.
It could be.
I've heard that, actually. That's some Michio Kaku shit. We should call him. Hey, Michio. What's up, fucker?
You that's a conversation you want to have Jeff on for, because Jeff goes deep dive into that. Okay, but the internet one that my guilty pleasure guilty pleasure conspiracy theory. Because I love them all.
They're so awesome. I love them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the whole Area 51 thing. Because my whole life has been surrounding that, where I've driven past it more than anything else in the world. And it's just that whole area is just, I can't digest enough of it. That and Skinwalker Ranch out in Utah. But really Area 51. Because it's driving past it at night, I used to listen to Art Bell. My first wife and I, when we would come up to visit my mom, we lived out in Vegas, so we would be driving past Pahrump and on the west gate of Area 51. And there was a few nights that I saw some really weird pulses out there, kind of EMP testing kind of pulses. Just in perfect, you could count to 45 pulse, count to 45 pulse, and lighting up the whole night. But and then the stat area would, the radio would crackle, and then it, go away. So just that whole area, just everything about it.
Okay. One of these nights, why don't you give me a call offline? let's just have a beer and revisit that.
Okay.
Would love to talk to you about that. And nothing crazy or groundbreaking, but some relatable things.
Sure.
Have you ever seen a UFO?
I believe I have. It's, not anything that was doing really crazy, flight patterns, but there's a camping area out by Death Valley called Saline Valley. And it's these natural hot springs that were built by a bunch of hippies that are kind of concreted in, and it's clothing optional. It's a really cool place to just go chill out in the middle of the desert. You got wild burros all over the place. You got F-18s out of China Lake flying upside down so they can look at the nude bathers and everything. Really cool place to chill. And you see things when you're out in the deep desert.
Yeah,
because there's no light pollution at all.
And the desert is inherently freaky as fuck.
Yeah, because it's not natural for people to live in it.
No, I am a desert rat. Where do you live, Ordy? What part of the country?
I live in the east side of California, up by Death Valley.
Oh, okay.
Between Death Valley and Mount Whitney.
I'm in West Texas, so I'm super desert rat.
Yeah, same desert. It's the Mojave Desert.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I'm deep California desert.
Okay.
And but yeah, that's, we always used to go out there and just shoot guns and listen to wild burros and just sit around naked staring at the sky.
Listen to Foghat, smoke a joint.
Yeah, right.
So, did you see a UFO?
I believe I did.
What do you want to describe what you saw?
Just flying it was either a helicopter at very high altitude or a UFO moving very slowly. It wasn't like that. You know, there wasn't the usual red, green light, you know, travel lights going. It was just kind of a pale yellow moving real slow west to east, real high up. You know, going, it would be counter the flight path of satellites. So it wasn't just like, you know, I was catching.
It looked lower than a satellite or?
Lower than a satellite and higher than you usually see a helicopter fly and moving real slow.
Out there in the lonely old desert.
Yep. And it took a very long time to cross the horizon. It was just kind of like meandering. Like it was also looking at the new.
That almost sounds slower than a satellite.
Yeah, much slower. You know, like a geosync satellite? Yeah, because some of them like go zip and pass. And this was before ISS. This was after Mir and Skylab and before ISS. So there wasn't anything that big up there that would have been, that we know of, moving that slow.
So I grew up in Montana, northwest Montana, and I was there in the, I moved up there in the 80s when I was a little kid, and I left there in the late 90s. I'm like the last of the last of Generation X. So I grew up in a town called Kalispell, is kind of there at the foot of the Glacier National Park and whatnot, up there on the Canadian border, about 60 miles south. Kind of a hot spot, northwest Montana, for UFO sightings and whatnot. Anyway, me and my best friend, we were kind of dorks back then. His mom said, we had to have been seniors. We were juniors or seniors. I think we were seniors. His mom set us up from these girls from like a neighboring town who were in to come watch the basketball game. And so we ended up being like their gentleman escorts for the evening. And that was great because, you know, I was just like this pothead Gilligan dork. Had like zero game of chicks. All I wanted to do was get high and have fun. And my friend, he was a little bit nerdier. So his mom set us all like up on this double date. And we went to the pep rally. I don't know what the fuck we did, dude. But we went to something. And then I remember we went to Dairy Queen. And then Dairy Queen was going fine. I'm a funny fucking guy. Funny guys can punch the fuck up. If you're a funny guy, you can have hot chicks.
Absolutely.
All you have to do is be funny. And that's like a trait you're born with. You can't develop it. You have to be funny. So things were looking well. We went to Dairy Queen, our dates, we were eating blizzards, whatnot. So we were like, let's get him in the Dodge Shadow. My fucking friend had a Dodge Shadow, dude. The thing smelled like fucking like ragweed anytime he turned on the fucking AC. So we were like, oh, let's go the long way home. And where I grew up in Montana, you know, you take like a left-hand turn, you can go out of town a little ways and see some scenic shit. Go along, you know, one of the million lakes or rivers or streams. So we ended up going outside of town and kind of making this little route, you know, trying to be a little romantic, seeing if maybe we could see some titties or some shit. Fuck. We were like 16 or 17, and, you know, that's what we want fucking, that was our prerogative. We ended up pulling up to this fishing access, the Flathead River, and we weren't going to try to make out with anybody, because when we pulled up, there were cars stopped in the fucking road, and people were standing outside of their vehicles. And so we stopped, and we looked, and at the river, which we were right there, we were basically like at a fishing access. The river, the rivers too, with the weather patterns that we would get up in Montana, usually would get like this fog bank that would roll over them. And when you watched it come in, it was super trippy, dude. It was like watching like Silver Bullet, some werewolf shit, right? Like you expected the werewolves to fucking come out of this kind of shit. So
I've seen this in every horror film ever.
Yeah, dude. The rivers would roll with some heavy fog, and it was cool as fuck to watch, dude. And we saw these cars pulled off. Everybody was just standing and looking out at the river, and I was like, what the fuck? So we stopped, and the river was covered in fog, and all we could see in the fog were these super bright fucking lights, dude. There was no sound, not a single peep. These bright lights kind of just strobing in a sequence, right? And I remember them as being kind of like a yellowish light. Like something you would see, like a halogen light from the 80s.
Okay. No, I'm totally with you on that. And that generation of headlights that pissed everybody off. Yeah,
these yellow lights, they were strobing. And this thing had to have been a fucking 100 yards long. That we couldn't see what the fuck it was. We could see a mass. Inside of the fog, we could see the yellow lights strobing around it. Everybody was just like fucking stopped. I think I got out of the car. I remember the girls that we were with immediately start to cry. They were just scared shitless. I remember this dude standing out of his fucking car, and I remember us just looking at it. I remember my friend saying, "What the fuck is that?" And I remember me just watching it. And then the
just
next
face set to gape.
Yeah. The next thing I remember, we were driving home. Silent.
So you even had a missing time aspect of it.
Yes.
So you actually would have had to have turned around too, or everybody, because you said there was other people on the road.
There
as
was
well.
other people on the road. There were people at the fishing access. My friend and I remember my friend saying, "What the fuck is that?" I remember the girls crying, and I remember me being mad at the girls, being like, "Shut the fuck up, let me think. Because it didn't make sense. And and then from the fishing access, seeing this thing embedded in the fog, and I remember it kind of fading away. And then the next memory I have is us on Whitefish Stage Road. It's just dark, and we're driving, and all of us are silent. The girls aren't crying anymore. We never talked about it the entire way home. And we went home.
No sunburns, nothing.
Nothing.
Just, yeah. Shit.
But
that's serious, man.
The thing that strikes me the most about this particular incident is when the girls start crying. When girls start crying, that makes shit real.
You know what, that's true.
It does, because you know there's some fucked up shit afoot. And right. I'm not even going to get into the semantics of that. Chick
is, you know, hysterical all the time about everything. I mean, because you got those, but no, I mean, that's yeah. What usually it'll be like one, but when you got both girls crying,
yeah, hysterically,
they
were scared to death. And I just, all I wanted them to do was just be quiet so I could think. And then all of a sudden we're driving down the road. That was my UFO story from when I was 17 or 18.
That's pretty significant.
That was a pretty cool story.
See, mine's just a maybe, because it's like, okay, well, I mean, I can't think of anything else it could be other than that. But, and that given my proximity to Area 51. So, but, wow, that's, wow.
But let's have a beer and revisit that Area 51 thing one of these
days.
Yeah,
we definitely, yeah. That's, I got other stories that I can't talk about with it, about people I know who worked out there too. So maybe you knew them or what, you know. Whatever we're going to be talking about.
I don't think so.
No, FBI, we will not be discussing that.
No. Oh, I bet my fucking FBI and NSA agents love me.
I like to mess with mine. Just fire up the weirdest shit on the internet. leave it on play when I go out for a couple hours. That's all right. That's all right, you guys. Watch that.
Don't. Oh, my God. He's Googling chicks with dicks.
No, I'll put on like the 10-hour loop of the from Archer when they got hacked with the what?
Dude, have you ever listened to SpongeBob like 800 times slower?
No.
Oh, you can't listen to that and can't tell me that we haven't had that at some CIA black sites. I'll send you a link.
Okay.
Dude, that's I had so much fun tonight.
That was awesome. Holy shit, yeah, we went 90. That's great.
We need to do a one-on-one again, man. I can talk paranormal theory, fucking fringe, fucking whatever forever. Look, we went from like Hitler giving us UFO technology to me in high school.
That's the track. That's how all great conversations go, though.
That's true. In fact, if you see that hot chick that you want to talk to, that you've been trying to work your nerve up to, you should be like, hey, I think Hitler gave us alien technology, and she'll totally cream her panties. Just kidding. Yeah. Don't do that. She will not. Probably get a restraining order put on you.
There's 19 ways to guarantee getting a drink thrown in your face. That's number four.
Number four, ladies and gentlemen.
Man, this was awesome. Thank you so much for producing tonight.
Dude, let's do it again, man.
Absolutely.
Let's get something on the regular going. I could talk this shit for days.
Yeah. No, totally. So where are you at this week?
This week I'm going to, I'll be out on Friday for He Said, She Said with Aggie Rican. You can hit us up on KLRNradio.com/chat. And we'll be there at 8:30 PM Eastern time. Just doing what we do. What about you, brother?
I got tomorrow. I've got Culture Shift with Brad, where we take our skeptical eye of the entertainment industry. And then on Monday, I'm back with FUBAR. FU is on hiatus until after the first of the year, so I'll have Jen or Brad or somebody filling in. Maybe you.
Throw FU into the Christmas production chat.
If she she's gonna see if she's got the schedule for it, and if she does, then yeah,
let's
she's
do it.
I gave her the date and the time.
Okay.
And yeah, she's interested. She approached me on it, and she was wondering, hey, when is the when's the schedule? And then I told her what we were doing and everything. She's like, oh yeah, if I can swing it, I'm in. She used to do one of the jokes between her and I. She's like, yeah, I was in theater for 20 years, and I said you couldn't find the exit. She hates that.
That's
so,
awesome.
But that'd yeah, no, I'll definitely hit her up on that because I think she'd have a good time with it too, especially with the way we roll everything in. Yeah,
dude, we're gonna make some magic happen for this Christmas production. I'm super excited about it.
Some Christmas magic.
Christmas magic.
You know, I was thinking we got for Halloween. Poe doing like a few Poe stories.
Okay.
And then VC mentioned it the other day, not for us to do it, but I think it would do really well if we did Lovecraft's In the Mountains of Madness.
Oh, I could totally be down with that.
Right.
Next Halloween, I was actually thinking if we rewrote War of the Worlds for KLRN specifically, and we start off like with a He Said, She Said, or, you know, whatever KLRN podcast, and interrupt that podcast.
Like we were doing live news breaks throughout the different shows.
Our different KLRN podcast, and we incorporate all of that. And, of course, that's top secret information. If you're listening to this, don't tell anybody or we'll have to kill you.
Make sure to eat your headphones after listening to this episode.
Isn't that a cool idea, though?
That is a pretty cool idea.
I got to run it by everybody else. Dude, I had so much fun tonight, man.
Dude, thank you so much, man. This was great.
Absolutely.
We definitely got to do it again.
Oh, we will. We're going to do something on the regular, man. We got too much to talk about.
We definitely do. Too close. Right on, man. Okay, everyone, thanks for joining us tonight, and we'll see you tomorrow, and Mick, you'll see you on Friday. And remember, Cthulhu did nothing wrong.
God bless America.